It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Think about what we're about to watch. The Republican-led Senate is about to issue a stinging rebuke of the president's border declaration. Well, he's warning senators on both sides of the aisle they're making a big mistake voting against him, and he's found his veto pen.
Anybody going against border security, drug trafficking, human trafficking, that's a bad vote. We'll see whether or not I have to do the veto, and it will be, I think, all very successful, regardless of how it all works out.
And yesterday, Vice President Pence toured Customs and Border Protection's training facility in Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, sending a message to Republican senators. But as it stands, five are signaling they will vote with the Democrats. Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Rand Paul, Tom Tillis, and Mike Lee. Now, Lee attempted a last-minute compromise with a proposal supporting this declaration, but putting limits on future presidents' use of emergency declarations. It was shot down. Meanwhile, Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is bringing pressure.
You ought to stand up to fear. Do the right thing, no matter who is in the White House. Our Republican friends know the right thing to do. They should not be afraid to do it.
Here's the math. Only takes four defections to block, which means they've got one to spare. But even if it does pass today, it's clear that there are not enough votes to override a veto, which would be a two-thirds vote.
That was Griff Jenkins this morning on Fox and Friends. Sandy Rios with you. And of course, today is the day that in the Senate, Mitch McConnell will allow a vote to overturn the president's right to declare an emergency order on the border. It's just amazing. And remember, I want to remind you, it was Mitch McConnell who said to the president when he signed, the president signed this really awful spending bill, what, a month ago? He said, you know what, President, Mr. President, why don't you, so we don't have to shut down the government, why don't you just declare an emergency and sign this bill and we can get on with things. And then, of course, the president did declare a national emergency and Mitch McConnell then proceeded to really undermine it and has done nothing to really discourage senators from not opposing the president on this. And so it's amazing. Even Republicans, and you just heard the list, it's Senator Lee, Senator Paul, Tillis, Susan Collins, and Lisa Murkowski. Now, why are they doing this? Because I would say purists like Lee and Rand Paul, and the rest of the list I can't defend in any way, but Mike Lee is a constitutional attorney, scholar, and they are concerned that future presidents, namely Democratic leftist presidents, will use it and ignore the Congress's authorization of funds to be spent. But I think the president is right. He just has a common sense response to them. He said GOP senators are overthinking. They're overthinking. This is very simply border security, no crime. And I've said to you before, do they really, really think that some leftist president like Beto O'Rourke, who declared yesterday he's so qualified, would not declare an emergency, would not do the same thing because the President Trump didn't do it? That he's going to say, oh, I can't do that because that wouldn't be right or would be the first time. I just can't do that. Are you kidding me? And just to remind you what's happening in the border here, Daniel Horowitz has a reminder this morning. Here's what a real emergency border plan would look like. But he gives some stats. Just since the December the 21st, the Department of Homeland Security has been forced to release 84,500 illegal aliens from Central America family units. 14,500 to Phoenix, 37,500 in South Texas, 24,000 in El Paso, 8,500 in San Diego. And all of those, many of them, released within 24 hours of coming across the border. It is catch and release. They're coming across, they're being released into the interior of the United States. And we have all these reports of diseases, communicable diseases, sick people that are being now foisted upon local hospitals and schools where their kids were, you know, have to be educated in our public schools, have to be treated in our emergency rooms. It is a disaster. It is an emergency. And so I would really implore you to call your senator today and ask them, especially your Republican senators, to support the president on this emergency declaration. Support him, for heaven's sake. This is a matter of securing the border for your constituents. Forget about pleasing President Trump. This is about the American people and their safety. And so that's where that stands today. And speaking of things happening today, I mentioned yesterday that today, for those of you near Washington, D.C., those of you who listen in Northern Virginia and Southern Virginia and in D.C. itself and anywhere nearby, there will be a sit-in in Nancy Pelosi's office. The address of that sit-in is, let's see, it is Longworth House Office Building. Longworth. It's going to start at 1 p.m. Longworth is on Independence Avenue. You can look that up. But Longworth House Office Building at Speaker Pelosi's D.C. office. And the idea, of course, is to demonstrate against anti-Semitism in Congress. Let me just say what the... I'm going to read this in just a second. The other thing is, since some of you cannot go, obviously it's too far, or maybe just the day is, it's just, you just can't. You got a doctor's appointment. You have a busy life. If I would listen, I wish I could go, because these kinds of things, they really generate, you understand the battle when you get right on the front lines. That's all I can say. You can instead, though, call her office, and I'm going to give you the number if you have a pen nearby. It's 202-225-4965, 202-225-4965. Now, what are you trying to communicate to Nancy Pelosi? You're trying to communicate to her that Omar Iwan should be censured and beyond that removed from the powerful and influential House Foreign Affairs Committee. And Speaker Pelosi surprisingly granted her that position in her first year as a legislator. Omar's thinking, her conduct, and her blithe willingness to inject hatred of Jews and the Jewish state into the legislative process make her unfit to hold such a strategic position. You know what I'm going to do? This is from ZOA, Zionists of America. I know the people at ZOA, and I like them a lot. So we're going to put this alert on our Facebook page so that you can read this and have the phone number, and you know, rather than just trying to catch it from my verbal accuse here. But I will say again that Nancy Pelosi's phone number is 202-225-4967. And the issue is to get Omar Iwan off of that. She shouldn't be in Congress, but Pelosi can't do anything about that. But she can take her off that House Foreign Affairs Committee. She's an anti-Semite, along with her friend Rashida Tlaib. And there's a lot more to the concerns, but that's one specific thing to demand. I want to also read to you something that I just think is amazing. I wish I could read this whole thing, but we will post it on our Facebook page, and I would recommend, I think you're going to hear it and want to send it to your Jewish friends, those that are not already conservative in their viewpoints about things, because this is a powerful piece. It's called Dear Jewish American Leftists, It's Time for a Talk. And it just says, from one Jew to another, from one parent, grandparent to another, from one who utters never again to another, from one witness of the vile anti-Semitic floats in Belgian parades to another, from one in horror watching the UK descend into 100 monthly anti-Semitic incidents to another, and from one seeing in disbelief the rise of anti-Semitism in the US to another, we may not agree on much, but this outrage we have in common. And then so she goes on to say, this is written, by the way, by Valerie Sobel. You are the resounding 72-74% majority of the 5.4 million American Jewry who have backed the Democratic Party since the sun has risen in the East. We get it. You're for minority rights because you will forever identify as a minority. You're forever for JFK, even though his brand of liberalism is long gone and has actually morphed into modern conservatism. You're forever for FDR, even though it was the Republican, Ronald Reagan, who delivered approximately 3 million Soviet Jews from the bondage of anti-Semitic leftist oppression. The Democratic Party of the 1950s was the party of the underdog, and you're forever for the underdog. In your mind, in your memory, and by virtue of your tiny demographic, Your parents and grandparents have been married to the Democratic Party since before you were born, and you can't let go of what has been ingrained in you with mother's milk. Understandable. Today is 2019, not the 1950s. And after the devastating failure of your party to stand with you as Jews unequivocally against the rabid Nazi-era anti-Semitism of Democratic Congresswoman Omar, you stand in the final hour of a critical decision. Depleted of all excuses, for your political loyalty, and you know it. And then she goes then and she says, first, your history. At the UN, your favorite President Barack Obama famously called for Israel to return to 1967 borders. You said nothing and continued to exalt his virtue. The same man orchestrated UN Resolution 2334, de facto proclaiming most of Israel illegitimate in Jewish hands. You said nothing and you continued to exalt his virtue. There is a list that goes on and on. Can't possibly read it all. But she goes on to say, because Obama is your guy, because he had the visible color of the underdog, because the Democratic Party is the perceived home of your ancestors. Those ancestors are dead. But here is your record. President Donald Trump, by virtue of the American embassy move, underscores Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. You instantly ended your supine silence and find your voice in loud opposition to the most logical, lawful, courageous, and Israel-loving politic. With trembling knees, you proclaim he's angering the Arab in your posturing speeches, in school, social media, and in endless editorials. When World War III failed to occur, you retreat back to your silence, having sufficiently defamed the president. The president defunds murderous Mohammed Abbas to the tune of $250 million per year. You continue to bash the president. And talks about Nikki Haley's performance at the UN, with her courage, yet you continue to bash the president. And it goes on and on. Commemoration of Jewish events, it goes back to the Trump family's longstanding personal financial support for Israel, going back to Trump's father. And it goes on. It's a really, really long piece. And this, she says, you vote for the party of Louis Farrakhan, who only months ago called you termites. You vote for the party whose elected politicians announce that you have dual loyalty, the oldest, most vilifying anti-Semitic charge of genocidal racism. And that's a long list, too. And then she ends by saying, so it isn't the disenfranchised, marginalized by all 10,000 white supremacists, your own party's embryo, you should be worried about. It's the sweeping reach of the politically correct, anti-Semitic Democratic Party into our collective psyche, our culture, our schools, our social norms, and our public opinion you should be disturbed about. Millions of malleable minds ingesting normalized anti-Semitism is far greater threat to your children's future than a one-time march of a unanimously hated group of thugs. As the majority bloc of the collective American Jewish vote, you have the power to determine how history and all our children judge, make the right choice. Anyway, I really truncated that. It's a very long piece. It's called Dear Jewish American Leftists, It's Time for a Talk, and it's excellent. We'll put it on our Facebook page. I want to remind you there's a new group called Jexodus, which is for Jews to leave the Democratic Party. And they are going to be having rallies in various cities around the country. You can see, if you just Google J-E-X-O-D-U-S, you can read more about that. And I want to remind you that that sit-in at Nancy Pelosi's office today is 1 o'clock in the Longworth House office building. So there you go. All right. I want to talk a little bit. Oh, there's a lot to talk about today. There was a lot of news today and so many things that I can't cover, but a lot of things that I absolutely do want to cover. I want to talk about, I'm going to have to wait till after the break. I want to talk to you about a little update on that, the college scandal, the bribery, and unbelievable things that two actresses and several other people participated in to get their kids in colleges and universities. I also want to talk to you, I want to play a little excerpt from a judicial nominee for the Ninth Circuit, which is just amazing. I want to tell you a story about Kellyanne Conway, and I'm also going to open the phone line. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Every day in preborn centers across the country, young women in crisis find refuge. Here's Roxy, nurse director for preborn at the Crisis Pregnancy Center in Southern California.
A lot of them come to us and they feel rejected, they feel alone, they're in a crisis situation, they don't know what to do, they don't know where to start. We believe that sharing the compassionate love of Jesus Christ is what really makes what we do work.
Through love and compassion, young women facing tough situations get to meet Jesus Christ and their unborn baby on ultrasound.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
For $140, you can sponsor 5 ultrasounds, and you'll receive a story and a picture of babies' lives that were spared. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Or go to preborn.com.
Unplanned, a true story of one woman's journey across the lifeline.
This is Abby. She's our newest volunteer escort.
Abby Johnson was passionate about a woman's right to choose.
I'm not going to apologize for doing a job that helps women in crisis.
She rose in the ranks of the world's largest abortion provider.
And the award goes to Abby Johnson.
Until the day she saw something that changed everything.
I just moved away from the catheter.
They always move. That's why I do it this way.
What she saw changed her heart.
It was like it was twisting and fighting for its life.
Changed her mind.
Tiny, perfect little baby. And then it was just gone.
They tried to silence her.
Don't underestimate the repercussions of this. You gotta be careful.
But nothing could hold her back from exposing the truth.
Congratulations. You've managed to make an enemy of one of the most powerful organizations on the planet.
Unplanned. In theaters everywhere, March 29th.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment each day to pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Karen Pence, wife of Vice President Mike Pence and the Second Lady of the United States. Mrs. Pence is in the United Arab Emirates for the Special Olympics, leading the U.S. presidential delegation. Psalm 121, verse 7 and 8 reminds us of the blessings we seek from God while traveling. The Lord keeps you from all harm and watches over your life. The Lord keeps watch over you as you come and go, both now and forever. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for safe travels for Karen Pence and the presidential delegation. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Schoolhouse rocked. That story coming up.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. There may be a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
The celebrity college cheating scandal seems to be the topic of conversation around the office Keurig these days. 50 people arrested, including 2 Hollywood stars, Felicity Huffman, Lori Loughlin, indicted for allegedly paying bribe money to get their privileged kids into high-profile universities. It's a pretty sad state of affairs in American higher education, and I suspect this is just the tip of the iceberg. I feel bad for the middle-class kids who got rejection letters passed over because they weren't trust fund babies. They had the brains, but they did not have the bucks. Here's what I don't understand. I mean, how dumb are the kids that it takes $500,000 to get them into college? And what kind of a moron parent forks over the cash? It's like they all fell out of the stupid tree and hit every branch on the way down. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Lori Loughlin and her husband stand accused of paying $500,000 in bribes to have their daughters designated as recruits to the crew team at the University of Southern California, even submitting a picture of one daughter on an indoor rowing machine, though the girls did not participate in crew. Others also faked a child's athletic prowess through phony photos. Court docs reveal one wealthy media executive paid bribes to have her son presented as a talented pole vaulter and her daughter as a tennis recruit. The founder of a food and beverage company allegedly paid $125,000 to have a talented test taker take the SAT and ACT for their daughter to get into Duke. One wealthy lawyer paid $75,000 for a proctor to correct his daughter's answers. A casino operator paid hundreds of thousands to fabricate basketball credentials on his daughter's behalf. TV star Felicity Huffman of Desperate Housewives stands accused of paying to have a daughter's SAT test answers secretly corrected. Dozens of wealthy parents funneled money to and through the mastermind of the scheme. William Rick Singer, 58, of California, who pled guilty to racketeering conspiracy and other charges in federal court in Boston yesterday. Loughlin's daughter, Olivia Jade Giannulli, a rising social media star, faced backlash for one prior posting.
But I do want the experience of, like, game days, partying. I don't really care about school, as you guys all know.
She later backtracked, tweeting last month in part that an education is also super important to me. Prosecutors have declined to charge students, some of whom were unaware of the scheme, but they could face consequences. Today, USC released a statement noting that applicants connected to the scheme will be denied admission and said a case-by-case review for current students and graduates will be conducted, warning of appropriate decisions to come. The scandal is hitting a nerve on campuses.
I think there absolutely are victims. I think it's any student who deserved to get in, who worked really hard.
Education Secretary Betsy DeVos weighed in, saying students should be considered on their merit.
Obviously, this is a Department of Justice operation, but we are looking very closely at it, and we'll see if any of the regulations that we are responsible for have been broken.
You know, I think this scandal is interesting to us because it's so personal. We can all relate to this. We all have kids, or at least know someone who has kids who have been trying to get into colleges and universities, and then the burdens, the financial burdens, it really has become a mess. It's become, I think this scandal is going to go much deeper than we can even imagine. I think we're going to be hearing more and more stuff. I just heard this morning as an addendum that one of the daughters of one of the actresses was actually on a yacht of some sort with some high position person serving either on the board or in the administration of one of the universities where she's attended and has been admitted when this thing came out. So, you know, and of course the parents are in a position to pay a lot of money to the students. I know that I have personally know of a friend who wanted to get his son into, I'm not going to rename the school, but it's a famous school. And they went to see the school, talked to the admissions. The kid is very successful, very, you know, high grades, very lots of stuff, all the right stuff on his resume. And the next question out of the person interviewing them's mouth was, how much are you willing to give to the university? And our friend says, well, what? I'm giving you, what, $50,000 right now for this year. What do you mean, how much would I be willing? And so that's it. I think it is going to be much deeper and much more disgraceful than you can even imagine. And when you think about the ACT scores and the SAT scores and kids working so hard to take these, to prepare their minds, there aren't enough kids doing that right now, I have to say. But some are still really working hard to try to get ahead. And this is stealing of a different kind. It's just stealing. And so I found it really interesting to know that the two actresses mentioned, Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin, actually were arrested. You know, they were arrested. I mean, they should have been. This is fraud. This is a crime. But of course, they're not the only ones on the list. Phil Kirpin is a D.C. pundit. Did a little research on the people that are listed as being involved in the scandal who've been charged. And he actually looked to see who they'd voted for president. So six of those arrested voted for Hillary Clinton. Six voted for Mitt Romney. Five voted for Barack Obama. One for Marco Rubio. And zero for Donald Trump. You know, what does that mean? I don't know. But I just think it's interesting. I'm with Phil. That's a real interesting little stat. Also interesting was Elizabeth Warren weighing in on this. Now, remember, Elizabeth Warren has claimed she is a Native American, a Cherokee. She puts it on her applications. And obviously, she thought that that would help her get ahead, or she would not have gone to such trouble to lay the marker that she is a Native American Cherokee, which now we know she's, what, 1/2200th of a Cherokee Indian, if that. And so she was asked, I'm going to tell you in a second. Morning Joe's Mika. She was asked about what she thought about this college scandal. Let's listen.
So as a parent, how much sympathy would you have for these parents who are embroiled in this alleged cheating scandal?
Zero.
Zero. Okay.
Zero. Zero. Boy, she is a walking contradiction, isn't she? You know, see who she who won't take big donor money. And now we know that all the big tech companies, including Google, not all, but many of the big tech companies have donated very generously to Elizabeth Warren while she's publicly saying that she won't take big money from big wealthy donors. It's pretty amazing. I just don't understand. I guess they've gotten away. The left has gotten away with lying and delusion for so long. It's just becoming worse. It's just pretty stunning. Meanwhile, we're continuing to learn more about the investigations, about the scandals involving the Trump presidency, the Russian collusion, alleged Russian collusion, unproven, all of that. Catherine Herridge had a really interesting report last night. And I would say, even if nothing is ever done about this in this life, I think it's still important that the truth be spread abroad. And so here's Catherine with some more of it.
During closed-door testimony last summer, former FBI lawyer Lisa Page said the Obama administration's Justice Department advised the FBI not to pursue the gross negligence statute for Hillary Clinton in the mishandling of classified information. Former U.S. Attorney and House Republican John Ratcliffe led the line of questioning about the statute, known as 18 U.S.C. 793. Ratcliffe, you're making it sound like it was the department that told you you're not going to charge gross negligence because we're the prosecutors. Page interrupted. That is correct. Page's testimony appears to conflict with then-FBI Director James Comey's recommendation in July 2016 against criminal charges for Clinton.
What I can assure the American people is that this investigation was done honestly, competently, and independently. No outside influence of any kind was brought to bear.
The Republican-led House Oversight and Judiciary Committee investigation ended in January, with Democrats now in control. The committee's new ranking Republican made the Page transcript public.
The transcript releases show an inherent two-tier system, one in which Hillary Clinton gets the treatment that she got, where they was actually at first concerned that they were going to charge her, and then with Loretta Lynch in charge, before she recused herself, made it very clear that that was not going to happen.
The tip-off came from a chart drawn up by federal investigators assigned to the Clinton case known as Mid-Year Exam. Fox News has confirmed that the chart listed possible federal statutes for prosecution. Next to gross negligence was a notation, quote, DOJ not willing to charge this. Only known cases are military. Cases when accused lost the information. In response to the Page revelations, the president tweeted the transcripts, quote, make the Obama Justice Department look exactly like it was, a broken and corrupt machine.
The Page transcript also confirms Fox's earlier reporting. The Page testified Russia collusion was still unproven when special counsel Robert Mueller was appointed.
See, that's a Catherine Herridge of Fox, but that just catch all of that. Now, Lisa Page, of course, is that FBI attorney at the highest levels, really, who was having an affair with Peter Strzok. And we have talked about her. She's been seen through that lens as the woman having the adulterous affair with Peter Strzok. But the truth is, Lisa had a very high position and a front row seat to what was happening at the FBI. So she, in her testimony, now that's being made public, we're learning a ton. She's contradicting James Comey. You heard that statement where he says there was no outside influence on our decision not to charge Hillary Clinton. Well, that's just not true. Lisa Page says it's not true. Of course, DOJ said, in fact, let her, Loretta Lynch directly. I would say another legal scholar following this made this observation. Newly released testimony by disgraced FBI attorney Lisa Page makes former U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch look blatantly dishonest and makes her infamous tarmac meeting with former President Bill Clinton look even sleazier than it already had. So remember that Loretta Lynch, when this all Mrs. Clinton's scandals were in the news, ended up meeting allegedly by accident on a tarmac in Arizona at the airport with Bill Clinton, who got on board her plane. They talked about their grandchildren. That's what they told us. And now we know that Loretta Lynch had a very strong hand in getting the FBI not to go after Mrs. Clinton. That's just as clearly as I know how to say it. So we're learning a lot more from these transcripts that are being released, and I think you're going to be hearing more as the days unfold. Meanwhile, we're learning something else. President Trump sat down with Breitbart in the Oval Office and did quite a lengthy interview. We're getting dribs and drabs of it, but we got some more yesterday. This is what he told us. He told Breitbart News, and now we're hearing it. President Trump told Breitbart News in an exclusive lengthy Oval Office interview that Paul Ryan blocked issuance of subpoenas to people he thinks should have been investigated on the political left. And now that the Republicans no longer have the majority in the House, people Trump says Ryan protected may have gotten away with whatever they did that warranted investigation. Paul Ryan, this is a quote from the president, Paul Ryan wouldn't give the right to have any subpoenas, okay? Now, in all fairness, Congressman Meadows and Jordan and all these guys, they wanted to go tougher, but they weren't allowed to by leadership. So here's the thing. This is continuing with President Trump's words. It's a terrible thing what's happened. You know, the left plays a tougher game. It's very funny. I actually think that the people on the right are tougher, but they don't play it tougher. I can tell you I have the support of the police, the support of the military, the support of bikers for Trump. I have the tough people, but they don't play it tough until they go to a certain point, and then it would be very, very bad. But the left plays it cuter and tougher, like with all the nonsense they do in Congress, with all these investigations. That's all they want to do is, you know, they do things that are nasty. Republicans never play like this. And so, but the significant part, but among other things, I think President Trump's common sense is what resonates with so many of us. He's absolutely right about that. Conservatives, whatever, the broad swath of conservatives, Republicans do not play like this, and they don't even play smart. But I do think he's right when he says, I think they are tougher, but they don't play like that. And there's a point at which they will be tougher. He says he doesn't think the left is as tough as the right. I think he's right. I think that's a very interesting observation. Breitbart goes on to sort of retrack Paul Ryan's record with President Trump, and I talk about this a lot. I probably don't need to retrack this with you, but he undermined the president at every turn. He promised things he never delivered, like border security. Before this last spending bill that was really bad, there was another really bad spending bill, and Paul Ryan promised the president over and over again he'd provide border security, we'd do a wall, we'd do all these things if you just sign this bill. So this is how it's been happening, and Paul Ryan was a key player on that. Let me just read. Paul Ryan was at a lecture in Florida just recently, and he says the person who defines the 2020 race is going to win the race. If this is about Donald Trump and his personality, he isn't going to win. Donald Trump Jr. responded, pretty rich. Mitt Romney's failed 2012 running mate, the speaker who lied to us and didn't deliver wall funding and then lost the House, gives advice on winning. You know, others have observed that Paul Ryan should have stepped aside. When he said he wasn't going to run, he did not step aside, and then he just went into this paralyzed mode and did nothing for the last however 6, 7, 8 months of his term before the 2018 election. It's just amazing. I think he has disgraced himself. That's what I think. So that's the latest story on that. Now, it's just an interesting piece. Have I got time to play it? No. The president has nominated a gentleman named Kenneth Lee to the Ninth Circuit Court. And Kenneth Lee was before, all these judicial candidates are being confirmed right now. They're up for confirmation, let's put it that way. And they have to go through all these hearings, but you're just not hearing about them because there are so many. By the way, Naomi Rao, who was nominated to fill Brett Kavanaugh's place on the D.C. Circuit, did get confirmation yesterday. And so she is an expert in deregulation, and the Trump administration has made, you know, great strides in deregulating, and that's part of the reason why the economy has taken off. So she made it through. But this other candidate, Kenneth Lee, was giving testimony yesterday, and I actually want to play it for you. So we'll do it on the other side of the break. I'll set it up a little bit. I just think it's a great story of immigration, the right kind of immigration. So stay tuned. Oh, yes, and we should open the phone lines because I promised. Our phone number is 888-589-8840. Anything you want to talk about, just be nice now. You can disagree with me. Just watch your language and be nice. 888-589-8840. 888-589-8840. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And when I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Full weaponization of the federal government to crush a political opponent. Politicians and a political party that build themselves as pro-life while refusing to actually do what's in their power to stop the killing of little babies. The successful and unrelenting advance of regressivism. All of these are signs that our national condition is not merely a natural phenomenon. It's spiritual. Civic engagement without spiritual engagement produces political roller coasters. National course correction will only come by national repentance. We must elevate him.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Exposing Washington reveals the deception that plagues our nation's capital.
The mainstream media refuses to tell the truth of what's really happening.
Exposing Washington brings clarity to the news coming out of Washington, D.C.
The American people must stay informed on what our government is doing.
Exposing Washington with Walker Wildman brings you the inside scoop of what's happening at our nation's capital.
We must take our country back.
Each Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney, host of Secure Freedom Radio. It's your personal, daily intelligence briefing about the challenges we face, how they're likely to affect you, and what we can do about them. You can find Secure Freedom Radio here every weeknight at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Tune in to learn from our extraordinary experts what you need to know and will want to share. Join us for Secure Freedom Radio tonight at 11 Eastern, right here on AFR.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Rich white elites have been busted for lying, cheating, and stealing to get their children into elite universities. Some of them paid up to $5 million to an outfit that offered to jigger their SAT scores, develop completely fake athletic profiles, and buy their way into top-tier colleges. Two observations. One, this is outright stealing. Stealing a spot from another student applicant who's actually more qualified but is denied something that rightfully ought to be theirs. Access is bought rather than earned. Secondly, it's also a response to the racism that has infiltrated the college admission system. White students are systematically discriminated against based purely on the color of their skin due to racial quotas at top schools. And the worst victims of the racism in admissions are whites of modest means who are virtually shut out of the process altogether.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Republican-controlled Senate is expected today to join the Democrat-controlled House in saying that there's not a national emergency along our southern border. To be sure, some GOP senators will try to have it both ways, claiming they actually think there is a national emergency, but they oppose President Trump's unilateral action to address it by constructing new physical barriers that Congress has repeatedly failed to approve. Such political contortionism is all the more irresponsible in light of the certainty that the emergency is about to become even more acute. The catastrophe unfolding as a result of the collapse of Venezuela's electric grid will predictably result in large numbers, possibly millions of additional refugees. Many inevitably will try to come here. Senators who effectively vote for an open border will be held accountable. Republican ones will likely be primaried. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I think of one experience about 35 years ago. I was wanting to go to Disneyland. I pestered my parents to take me to Disneyland. They finally agreed to take them to Disneyland with my three sisters. But to save money, they decided to take some Korean food, kimbap, which is rice with Korean vegetables wrapped up in seaweed. So this was 35 years ago. That kind of food was quite exotic. So when we were there and we opened up our food for lunch, you know, again, little kids started coming up, and some said it smelled. Others said it looked like feces. They used a slightly different word. And one of them I remember was, you know, pointing to my parents, making kind of faux Asian-sounding names and pulling their eyes. And I remember, you know, and when you're a kid, smallest things seem like the world to you. And I remember the next day, maybe because I was young or because I felt helpless, I blamed my dad for this whole thing. And I said, I want to go back. I want to go back to Korea. And I said, you know, you never asked us if we wanted to come here, move to a new country. And, you know, my dad was a stoic man, but he said, you know, I know it's tough for you. It's tough on your sisters. It's tough on me and your mom. But one thing I always remember, and you know, maybe I didn't take it as seriously when I was younger, but something that I always remembered and learned more as I got older. He said, I know it's tough here, but he said, you don't want to go back. He said, because things aren't fair there. He said, the families that control the conglomerates there, the chaebols, he said, you know, they control the government, they control the economy, they control the laws. So you're not going to get a fair shot there. But he said, here in America, he said, things are different. He said, it doesn't matter that you're not white. It doesn't matter you weren't born here. It doesn't matter that our family doesn't have wealth or power. He said, everyone here is treated equally. And, you know, my dad wasn't a lawyer. He never read the Federalist Papers. But he had a gut understanding of what makes our country and our Constitution so great, so powerful, and so unique in the world. And I've always remembered that.
That was the voice of Kenneth Lee, who has been nominated by President Trump to be on the Ninth Circuit Court. And you will remember, of course, that the Ninth Circuit is referred to as the Ninth Circus because they make so many decisions that have to be overturned by the Supreme Court. They are the wacky left court of the circuits that exist in the United States. The significance of that is that in the hearing yesterday, as Kenneth Lee was giving his testimony, that was not part of his opening statement. He was not trading off of his father's memory, but somebody, one of the Democratic senators, tried to use a memory he had shared or written about of his departed father against him, and he responds spontaneously with this story. It's just moving. And so I just wanted to make the point that this is an example. Now he's in line to be a justice on the Ninth Circuit Court. After what he's experienced, how he grew up, and what he remembered his dad saying about justice being blind in this country. You don't want to go back to Korea, the Korea of that time. It's all corrupt. You know, here everyone's treated differently, equally, no matter what you think. This is hard, but people are treated equally. And I just think it's an amazing story of immigration done right. I want to read something very quickly to you. This is from a listener. I have an employee whose brother recently crossed the border illegally. He relayed details of his journey to me, and I was in shock. He has no reason to lie. He stated that while traveling to the United States from southern Mexico, he had to pay several hundred dollars at different points just to cross to the countryside. Once he reached the border with the United States, he made arrangements with what I would characterize as gang members. These members made arrangements with their counterparts in the United States to pick this young man up. He paid the people for their troubles and was delivered to a specific stretch of road where he was picked up as planned. Once he was picked up, he was delivered to a safe house close to a large city. He was given food and clothing, but not allowed to leave the house until someone within the United States came to pick him up. At the time of pickup, his family had to pay $5,000 to $6,000 in cash to the people running the house. Once the payment was made, he was free to go with his family. Then there were about, he says, 25 people in this group. Using extremely conservative numbers, let's say those 25 people each paid $5,000. Let's also say the gang members take weekends off and only do this 5 days a week. If the people are like all good Americans and only work 50 weeks a year, that turns into several people crossing illegally. Let's conservatively say that there are 40 of these houses stretching along the border. I know there's no way to tell how many houses there are. There could be thousands, but at 40 houses, you run into 250,000 people a year crossing the border undetected illegally. Using the same figures, you quite easily see how the cartel made $30 million just in trafficking people in 1 year. And then once the cash was received, he reported it was placed in a box with other cash. There was a bedroom in the house stacked full of boxes. And our listener says, I took my calculator and checked it twice to make sure I hadn't mistakenly hit a wrong number. The numbers of people and money is unbelievable. The truth is, we really have no idea how many people are in the United States illegally. And he's absolutely right. And that is my understanding, too, from other experts, is that the gangs, the drug gangs, are running the border. They are the ones in charge, and we have just lost control. It is indeed a national emergency. All right, I want to go to your phone calls as efficiently as we possibly can. Let's go to Randy in Arkansas. Good morning, Randy.
Hey. Hey, Sandy, how you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
The thing about the colleges and then you're just talking about the border, to me it all boils down to line jumpers. People wanting to cut in line and put their interests ahead of everyone else. And it's surprising to me how the liberal left doesn't see anything wrong with that when they're so big on equality.
Boy, that's a very good point, Randy. It really is. You know, I remember years ago when I lived in Germany, it stunned me at how the Germans did not respect lines. I can make this a funny story, but it would take too long. Let's just say it's funny and not funny. But they would kill each other to get on a bus. They refused to line up, and they thought the British were really stupid for queuing, as they call it. And I remember thinking about how interesting it is that in America we voluntarily, it's part of our culture, that we do things in order and respectfully. The person that's first in the line gets to order first. We don't step in front of them. And really is absolutely, you're right, Randy. It's the height of unfairness. And it used to be part of our American fabric. And I think we need to restore that. Thank you very much. Let's go to Lisa, who also wants to talk about the college scandal. Lisa, what's on your mind?
Hi, I'd like to talk about the high school cheating scandal.
Yes. High school.
The college application cheating scandal.
Yes.
Okay, so my daughter just applied for college last year and was admitted. She's an absolutely top student, 94th percentile SAT, PSAT scores. The interesting thing to me is I live in Virginia, and the counselors for public schools have to sign off on everything, and they actually have a contract with the parents, and the parents have to sign off on everything. So the parent is required to submit a very detailed essay about their child's strengths and weaknesses and activities and sign that they verify that everything that the student submitted to the counselor was accurate. And then the counselor also gets the student to submit an essay, and they have to sign that it's accurate. So there is something with this college admission scandal where the high school counselors are involved somehow, too.
Wow, that's really interesting. That's interesting, yeah. Lisa, because you heard me say probably earlier, I think this is much, much deeper than we can imagine. I
question whether these students went to private schools and if the private school counselor signed off on everything.
You know, I just don't know. I don't know, but listen, that's very interesting. And so you brought something else to our attention. I'll actually pass that along. So thank you, Lisa. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. Let's go to Jimmy in Texas. Good morning, Jimmy. What's on your mind?
Hey, so I am I'm a Trump voter. I'm, you know, a Republican conservative, basically. And everywhere everybody I agree with kind of is on the same page with the criticism of Israel being anti-Semitism. And I personally just don't understand that. And I'm wondering your stance on that and what your reasoning is on that.
Well, I've never said that, Jimmy. I've never said that criticism of Israel is anti-Semitism. I think that's a stretch. I think that's point that the left is trying to make.
When the congresswoman brought up AIPAC and it being all about the Benjamins for those types of Congress people, everyone is kind of equating that to anti-Semitic tweets or whatever. I don't see it.
Yeah, well, you know why you don't see it? Because you are, like me, an Anglo-Saxon, probably. I'm guessing. You're probably an Anglo-Saxon American, and we're not Jewish and don't have those roots. But I know from my Jewish friends that this whole accusation of anything that has to do with Jewish, the stereotype of Jewish greed or Jewish Jews and money and all of this, of them being tight or just all of that is what they would call a dog whistle. And Omar Ilwan, because of her background, knows exactly that. And even though it might not be part of your experience or mine, it might not be. It's like our black friends. There are many things that can be said that they think are veiled dog whistles of racism from the past. Just even the term boy or whatever, they have sensitivities to that stuff that you and I might not have because it hasn't been our experience. So that's really what that boils down to. But honestly, Jimmy, I do not think that criticism of Israel amounts to anti-Semitism because Israel is a state, a secular state, and they don't do everything right. But if you're talking about wanting to destroy Israel and wipe them off the face of the earth, which is what Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, those are the kinds of people they hang around with. That's what they believe. Now, that's a bridge a little too far. That's anti-Semitism. Does that make sense to you, Jimmy?
Yeah, that makes sense. I just think that that's kind of like what the left says about like LGBT rights. It's what they say about all their issues. It's what, you know, when we criticize Muslim countries, it's not because we're anti-Muslim. When we criticize Sharia law, it's not because we're anti-Muslim or anti-Islamic even. It's a criticism of a doctrine. Criticism of AIPAC is a criticism of a lobby. It's the most influential lobby, foreign lobby in Congress, and all foreign lobbies are supposed to register as such. But AIPAC is not.
Well, I don't know. AIPAC is, they're Americans. They're not Israelis, Jimmy, and they look out for the best interests of Israel, just like Emmett does. That's another organization.
Why can't we criticize a lobby?
You can criticize a lobby, Jimmy. If it were simply a matter, Jimmy, I didn't say that. You did. I did not say that. Ilhan Omar, her criticisms are far deeper than a criticism of AIPAC. She is accusing the Jews of stereotypical Jewish behavior, and people know because they know that Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib are deeply tied to Muslim Brotherhood Islamists, and it's not a secret what they believe. So when they, like, slip and say something like that, you know that Ilhan Omar, what did she say? She tweeted in 2012, something about the, oh gosh, I forgot, it's very offensive. Much more blatantly offensive. She's much more careful now. But she is an anti-Semite. She is because of her very background and the things she embraces and the people she hangs with, Jimmy. So that's the problem. And she's on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and that's very dangerous because she's going to have access to all of our secrets. Do you have a problem with that?
Well, I don't know about her older tweets. But I just, you know, and I haven't really seen anybody quote any of those older tweets. So
yeah, well, I have.
You know,
I have on the air.
I
have quoted them. You just missed it. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, gotcha. No, I personally don't have a problem with criticizing foreign influence and stuff. I guess, like, I'm a very old school, staunch conservative. I'm more on the Rand Paul end of the spectrum. So as a Bible-believing Christian, I think that, you know, we are called to pursue truth. And I really believe that the truth of it is that AIPAC has an extreme amount of influence.
All right, Jimmy, okay, we're not talking about AIPAC. We're talking about Ilhan Omar and her anti-Semitic views, which are very dangerous.
I think a lot of your listeners are going to hear that, and because of the rhetoric, are going to believe that this speech is anti-Semitic.
I think you're probably right, and they probably should. Jimmy, I think you have a different agenda than being a conservative Republican really concerned about AIPAC. I wish we had longer to talk because I don't have time to really talk to you, but I absolutely do. I don't mind that. They can take from that she's anti-Semitic because I think it's true. I think she's very dangerous. And by the way, for those of you near Washington today, there will be a sit-in in Nancy Pelosi's office to object to the anti-Semitism which is rising on the Democratic left and in Congress. It's very dangerous. They'll be demanding that Ilhan Omar be removed from the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and I'm in full support of that because she is indeed, in spite of what Jimmy thinks, anti-Semitic. I got to take a break, about a 24-hour break. Be back with you tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.